You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, this is Aileen Quinn from Annie, the 1982 film, and you're listening to Flopcast.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 312.
Can you imagine getting two pieces stuck together in your mouth? That's how you know you're going to have good luck.
Yes, yes, hello, Flopcast people. Cornflake is not really here this week. That was a drop I just put in before the theme song. But we were not able to record a regular Flopcast this week. This happens occasionally. We'll have a scheduling conflict or whatever. And yeah, that happened this week. It was my fault this week. It's usually all Cornflake's fault, believe me. But I had a schedule issue this week and we were not able to get together and record. But that's okay, because we have something very cool and very special to play for you this week. We call these bank shows. We try to keep at least one or two shows on reserve that we can drop in for just such an occasion. We even have a couple more shows just on reserve right now, behind glass, you know, for emergency situations. Sometimes we run out of bank shows, and then we really have to scramble when there's a scheduling issue. But we're good for this week, and here's what we have. This goes back to Aresia, which is the big science fiction convention that we have in Boston every January. And Cornflake and the mayor and I were all at Aresia. We were very happy to be more involved with Aresia this year than we ever had before. We did a couple of panels and some other events and things. And this is one of the panels that I did at Aresia. This was called Serial and Cartoons, Saturday Mornings Revisited. Obviously, Saturday morning cartoons, one of our very favorite subjects around here. I mean, to this day, obviously, the Saturday morning cartoons are essentially dead as far as TV goes. But around here, we still make our own Saturday morning lineup every week. We pop in our DVDs and watch some of the classic old stuff. We've been watching some Davy and Goliath around here lately, which I believe gets mentioned in the panel that you're about to hear. So here's the panel. This is me. It is Kevin Cafferty, another Kevin. Kevin is a documentary filmmaker, also writes for the Forces of Geek website. We have Andy Hicks. Andy is also a podcaster for the Coal Hill AV Club podcast, which is about Doctor Who. And as Andy also mentions, he's a producer for WGBH. And for people outside the Boston area, WGBH is our big PBS station. For people that grew up around here, as I did, you hear WGBH, that's Channel 2, that just sounds like magic to you, because that was the station. That is where I watched Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers, Electric Company, 321 Contact, you know, Zoom, all that stuff back in the day. Zoom was actually produced at WGBH. That was a locally produced Boston show that then went out nationally to all the other PBS stations. So around the country, you could see all our wacky local Zoom kids. So Andy works at WGBH, which I think is awfully cool. And we have Karen, and Karen is one of the hosts of Foxes in the Hen House, which I know we've mentioned on the Flapcast before because I'm a big fan of that podcast. They've been kind of on hiatus lately, I think. They haven't done a new show in a while, so I hope they're going to get that going again soon, but we'll see. And Karen also works with the Post Meridian Radio Players. Post Meridian Radio Players is a local theater group. They do radio-style productions in a theater setting. Very fun stuff. I've been to a couple of their shows. So this is a great group. Every time I've done one of these Saturday morning cartoon-type panels, the convention always assembles just such a fantastic group of people. So Kevin and Andy and Karen were just the best. I know you're going to enjoy this. We cover so much ground. We run through so many classic Saturday morning shows and probably a few that you never even heard of. We hit some kind of weird, obscure stuff, which we always enjoy. And even though Cornflake is not here this week, unfortunately, you will hear Cornflake during the panel. Listen carefully, because Cornflake was in the room, and the mayor of Chickentown was in the room. In fact, this was the show where the mayor was wearing her rubber chicken costume, as you may recall, from when we talked about Aresia. So Cornflake and Felicity, the mayor, were both there, and they do both speak up during the panel. We had a lot of people popping up out of the audience to make some contributions. So listen for them. I think they both talk about Mr. Magoo. Because why wouldn't they? We're also obsessed with Mr. Magoo around here. That's when they just couldn't contain themselves anymore and just had to speak up, you know? So listen for them. And all right, let's do this. And I'll check back in with you on the other side. But here is from January 2018 at Aresia. This is Serial and Cartoons Saturday Mornings Revisited.
Welcome to our He-Man Skeletor slash panel. And
all right, folks, we are past time now, so let's get going. The microphones are totally dead, so we will just try to be loud, and this should work. It's a nice, quiet, polite Saturday morning crowd. Thanks for getting up nice and early to join us.
You're welcome. Oh.
Specifically Karen. This is Serial and Cartoons Saturday Morning Revisited. So let's do this. My name's Kevin. I'm the host of a really goofy podcast called The Flopcast. It's kind of a geeky, silly pop culture themed show, and Saturday morning cartoons are absolutely one of our obsessions on The Flopcast. It's part of the ESO network. I have cards here. I have weird badge ribbons with turkeys on them, so if you want any of this stuff, come see me. My co-host is on one side of the room. One of the show's producers is that chicken lady. And let's go down the line and see who we have on the panel.
Hi, my name is Kevin Cafferty. I make documentary films, and occasionally I write for the website Forces of Geek.
I'm Andy Hicks, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Coal Hill AV Club podcast, which is a Doctor Who fan podcast, and also a producer for WGBH in Boston, and I'm here to tell you that educational programming is better than the stuff you watch to rot your brain now. Because I watched the same stuff growing up, and I still love it.
I'm Karen. I am one quarter of the podcast Foxes in the Hen House. Also, during this convention, I'm Captain Kirk in the PMRP's Gender Swapped Amok Time, which is tonight. Shameless plug. I'm also apparently, like every 80s television show you watched, the token female. I will be here to both be vulnerable and strong at the same time. But only because it's really early for me and I'm not going to wake yet.
She's a bow.
She's the girl.
You know that I'm like the token, like, gender normative female, because I would have been here in my pink pajamas, but my cat was sleeping on them and she was really cute and I couldn't move her.
Does this mean you'll be kidnapped, tied up, or hypnotized before the panel is done?
It is Aresia.
You know, I wanted to get sort of your secret origin stories, your earliest introduction to the world of Saturday morning cartoons, because this was, and I guess depending on your generation, you know, that this was such an event. I lived for Saturday morning back then. That's what you waited for all week, and that was it. That was your time. And even locally, like I remember Channel 56, Uncle Dale, you know, like watching Brady Bunch reruns every night. Friday night, Uncle Dale on Channel 56, he would always say, "Hey kids, tomorrow when you get up to watch your Saturday morning cartoons, keep the volume nice and low because Mom and Dad want to sleep in." He'd remind you that, and I tried to do that because I was up so crazy super early. I'd be up watching the test pattern at morning, waiting for Davy and Goliath to come on. And Kevin, what do you remember as far as your Saturday morning experience?
I was effing obsessed with Saturday morning cartoons growing up. Like you, I used to sort of fly too close to the sun, get up way too early. I remember most of the stations had test patterns. I think WCVB up here would show the show called Captain Bob, which wasn't even a cartoon, but it was like a crusty old seaman
who would, like,
drop pelicans.
And Captain Bob would just draw a picture, like a nature scene, and you would draw along with them.
Yes, it was,
I remember that guy.
Yeah, it was.
He was like Bob Ross, but even more relaxing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He drew in crayon. He had a little beard. Like he lived in a lighthouse.
Yes.
If you believe the opening intro to the show, he wore a little scarf. It was delightful.
There wasn't a lot of mythos behind it, but I was.
That's where fan fiction comes in.
Yeah, that's where I'd get my cereal in. I'd be like, okay, Captain Bob, and then I'd get my cereal. I had siblings growing up, but they weren't as obsessed as me, so they would be sleeping, and then they would go play sports. Yeah. And I would also like kind of hang on to the bitter end when they would show like ABC Story Break and stuff like that. So
it would kind of peter out. Yeah. Came up in Boeing eventually.
Yeah, basically once sports showed up, that's when I knew things were done, and I had to go do something else. But I was fully ensconced.
Sometimes I would feel ready, like I wanted to go outside and run around after watching Bigfoot and Wild Boy.
Yeah, I had enough sugar in me, so definitely.
Yeah, if you grew up here, or if you didn't grow up here, traditionally, you knew Saturday morning was over when candlepin bowling came on. Candlepin bowling is a form of bowling that only exists in Massachusetts and Nova Scotia, where the balls are like half the size of regular balls, and you roll them, and you get three? Do you get three instead of two or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. And my wife, who grew up in Wisconsin and Illinois, like, it loves it and had never been introduced to it before. So I figure if anyone's from out of state.
It's the best game ever because it's the love child of like bocce and skee ball.
Yes. And they would show this on television, and it was really exciting. But now my introduction to Saturday morning cartoons, I feel like it must have been the Charlie Brown and Snoopy show reruns, maybe. And again, like we'd get up really, really early, and you sort of catch the end of Davy and Goliath. Mm-hmm. And when Charlie Brown and Snoopy show came on at like, I think 8:30 or so, that was the moment when I'd like run into my parents' room and demand breakfast. I know that, but yeah.
I don't remember what my first cartoon was, but I do remember. I started watching Saturday morning so young I hadn't learned how to read a clock yet. So I would get up and it would be like pressure lux, like no whammies, no candlepin. So I don't remember what it was that I watched. I just know that I was glued there. I have very vivid memories of watching Rocky and Bullwinkle with my dad.
Nice.
Like on dad's lap, and my dad is like, looks like the love child of Fred Flintstone and Tony Soprano. So you've got it. There's only so much lap. So I had to have been very small when this happened. That sort of, I grew up on the story that Rocky and Bullwinkle had to animate an apology because they told kids to take the knob off their TV so that they could be sure to have it on the right channel when the next episode came on. And so many kids did it, they had to animate an apology.
Oh, nice.
And so, I go from that to the, you mentioned the keep the volume down. All I can think of is Freakazoid. After the credits, he'd rip the credits up and be like, hey, kids, go wake up your parents and tell them you're hungry.
Pee Wee Herman would specifically tell all the kids to scream.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Oh, God, that was such a good show.
So by that point, it was like 10 in the morning, so maybe your parents were up. So that was good. But, yeah, that must have been really unpleasant for my parents.
I think the earliest one that was really my favorite was probably the Super Friends.
Yeah.
Which was on forever. Like, that started in 73, and they reformatted several times over the years, and it went clear through, like, 85, I think. You know, the early ones were Marvin and Wendy, then they switched them out for the Wonder Twins, and they had those ethnic stereotype heroes that they added, Apache Chief and Samurai.
Ah, those were the days.
they meant well.
Yeah. And the token female in Wonder Woman.
Yes.
They checked a lot of boxes. I guess with Super Friends, what strikes me about Super Friends now is, I guess in the 60s, there were a lot of superhero cartoons, and they went away because the networks got afraid of angry parents about violence. Mm-hmm. So they're like, well, we're going to reintroduce superheroes with the Super Friends, but they're not going to do anything that you like watching superheroes do.
Yeah. They're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
Banned from throwing any punches.
Yeah. Yes.
It was a very strange show because, yeah, in the 60s, you had the Marvel cartoons, it was Spider-Man, but then those other Marvel cartoons where they pretty much just stole Jack Kirby art.
Yes.
Sort of half-animated it. Meanwhile, Filmation was doing the early DC superhero cartoons, and those were half a step up from that. Super Friends was such a weird show at first because Hanna-Barbera was locked into the Scooby-Doo format. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, well, it's going to be a superhero show, but it's also going to be teens with a dog creeping around. So we got Marvin and Wendy and Wonder Dog. And those Super Friends, the first season, it was an hour-long story. And half the time, you're watching those stupid kids and their dog. Like, where's Aquaman?
I didn't tune in for this.
Was anybody really asking where Aquaman was?
I'm still asking.
Show for a while.
That's true. That's
what I mean.
Yeah, there was an Aquaman cartoon in the 60s, one of those Filmation DC shows. Merlin, who's in the audience, made these beautiful booklets out of all of the comic book ads showing the Saturday morning lineup.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Yep. These are
gorgeous, but I hope people can flip through these because those are, I love seeing these comic book ads every year to see what the lineup was, and also the Friday night preview shows.
Mm.
The season.
Yeah.
Watch the Friday night preview show to see what all the new cartoons were going to be.
Oh, God. So
an event.
I showed my wife, who had never seen this because her parents had like taste in what they let their kids watch. I showed her Elf Loves a Mystery.
Yes.
Elf Loves a Mystery was the 1987 preview show, maybe. Do you remember seeing this?
No, but now I have the theme song to Alf's cartoon stuck in my head, but please continue.
Gordon, the scene stitches. Ain't no one like you in this place.
Gordon!
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Yeah.
Let's hear some sexy saxophone music.
Oh, God. So Alf the cartoon, I feel like it was the same year Alf the cartoon came out, which was sort of a prequel to Alf the Alf series. But the idea was like there's Alf and the little kid from Alf, like Benji, maybe, little kid. Yeah, Brian. Brian is, okay, the actor's name is Benji. So Brian. And Alf's...
There's an Alf expert in the front row.
Oh, yeah. Alf's in his study, and Brian comes in, and Alf's writing a mystery. He's like, hey, kid, I'm going to put you in a mystery story. And so all of a sudden, the kid's got like a little fedora and trench coat, and he shows up in like a traditional haunted house mystery kind of locked room kind of thing with Jack A from 227, Shannon Doherty from 90210, before she was on 90210, when she was on, I think, something else, and a couple other just NBC people from the late 80s as the various suspects. But the only mystery, like every clue he'd find would be like, oh, here's a preview of Alvin and the Chipmunks. It's not really a clue. It's just a clip from Alvin and the Chipmunks. And
sounds like Alf was writing his own fan fiction.
He was. It gets creepy because there's moments where he's like, you know, kid, you need sexy saxophone music. It's like, Brian's eight. What are you doing?
As are the children watching this show.
Yes!
I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, sexy saxophone music was a very formative part of baby Karen's development.
Also, as things went on, as the decades progressed...
And the saxophone music got sexier.
what you could show increased.
Yeah.
The Friday night preview shows, those were made on a budget of like $3.
Yeah,
because they knew we could never show these again.
Mm.
So they didn't want to put any money into them. So they had barely had a story. It was just throw something on the screen. There's one for a couple years before that Alf one. There was a mid 80s one hosted by like live action in costume Scooby Doo people and Weird Al Yankovic. And they're running around a theme park together.
That sounds better.
That's a good one.
That's on my bucket list now. I want to run around an amusement park with Weird Al and someone dressed as the characters of Scooby-Doo, especially if it's Matt Lillard.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like 10 years later, Weird Al became a Saturday morning star himself because we got the Weird Al show in the mid-90s, which was really probably the last of the great live-action Saturday morning shows.
Probably.
Speaking of which, the live-action stuff I was always a fan of, and when you just go back through lists of Saturday morning programming, there's more of it than you think.
Yep.
Like you always say Saturday morning cartoons, you're locked in on cartoons, but they did so much weird live action stuff, and the obvious example is the Crofts, Sid and Marty Croft.
I grew up in a drug-free household, so I didn't understand the Croft shows very much.
That's the great part of those shows, though, is it's as close to drug-free people will get to being on actual drugs without, you know, any of the nasty side effects, except for the nightmares. The nightmares will always be there regardless.
Yeah, the early Croft stuff, it was the late 60s, early 70s. This was the psychedelic era, so that was the style of the time. I don't think it was as druggy as it looks.
No.
As far as, you know, that was the time. Yeah.
A lot of creatives,
there was certainly something going on.
Your various creatives were probably part of that scene, but I don't think they were trying to like impose any kind of message on the kids. It was just like, we got really high and wrote about a kid with a flute and a giant thing.
The Crofts were not part of the hippie generation. They were in their 40s, I think, when they really broke through with their production company.
Yeah.
They'd been around quite a while then, though I'm sure a lot of the writers were quite younger as well, though. So, yeah, a lot of crazy, freaky stuff sneaked in of Bugaloos and Woodsville and those, you know, a world of living hats.
This is slightly off topic, but did you ever see the live action variety show the Crofts produced called Pink Lady and Jeff?
Absolutely.
Oh my god.
I've got the whole set on DVD.
Oh, it's so magical.
I was trying to throw it out.
Yeah, Pink Lady and Jeff is astonishing. If you don't know, the Crofts brought to America a Japanese singing duo, these two women who were huge pop stars in Japan. They could not speak English. And so they added comedian Jeff Altman to the lineup. So it was Pink Lady and Jeff, and it was just a variety show in like 1980, I think. And it's astonishingly awful.
It would be like now we're going to do a traditional Japanese song, and it would be like Boogie Wonderland. It was wonderful.
The Crofts, there's a Saturday morning equivalent to that as well, because the Crofts had the Crofts Super Show, which was originally hosted by Captain Cool and the Kong, sort of a wacky glam rock band. And that's the show that had Electra Woman and Dinah Girl and Dr. Shrinker and Bigfoot and Wild Bud, all that stuff. Then they switched out the bands. They brought in the Bay City Rollers, who were very, very, very Scottish. I hardly understand a word those guys said either. I love the Filmation, the live action stuff as well. Shazam and Isis. And that led to like Arc 2, Jason of Star Command.
And then there was like a Filmation show that did not run for very long called The Ghostbusters.
The original Ghostbusters?
Yes.
This was live action.
Was that actually a Saturday morning show?
Yes.
Or was it?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Larry Storage, yeah. Forrest Tucker, and somebody in a gorilla suit.
This is pre...
And that's why the real Ghostbusters cartoon, that's why it was called The Real Ghostbusters, because Filmation owned the name Ghostbusters for a TV show. Yeah.
I do think live action in some ways was one of the death knells for the Saturday morning cartoon. I think the success of Saved by the Bell in the late 80s caused NBC to just decide, we're going to make very brightly lit sitcoms starring teenagers instead. Mm-hmm. And so
California Dreams.
Yes.
Content, yeah.
Yeah, NBC was the first of the major networks to just get out of the cartoon business in the early to mid-90s.
What station was Beekman's World on?
CBS.
Was it CBS? Because I think that was my favorite of the
live action.
Of the live action ones. Yeah, yeah. I really wanted to be the... Oh, God, why am I blanking on her name? The token chick on that show. Not not Beekman. Is it Josie?
What was Josie?
Yeah, no, it was totally Josie then.
Was it Judy Tenuta who played that, or was that somebody who really liked Judy Tenuta?
I think it was someone who really liked Judy Tenuta.
Okay, yeah.
I would remember.
So anyone on the planet, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Because there was no accordion.
No.
So I'm thinking maybe not.
And
Josie and the Pussycats.
Uh-oh.
And then they went to space because reasons.
Yes.
that fuzzy character with
bleep bleep.
Yeah. I love.
Stereotypical dumb blonde.
Yeah.
Melody,
Gilligan's plan to go find Josie and the
Pussycats. There was Gilligan's plan, which is the cast of Gilligan's Island stranded on another planet.
Mm.
And
why would they travel together anywhere ever again?
They were trying to get off the island, and they just
kind of Josie and the Pussycats were in space. The Partridge Family went into the future.
Mm-hmm.
The Brady Bunch cartoon was where Wonder Woman first showed up in animated form.
That is true. In any form. Wonder Woman's TV debut was not Super Friends. It was the Brady Kids, which was the Filmation animated version of the Brady Bunch. And there was an episode where Wonder Woman shows up and the Brady Kids and Wonder Woman travel back in time to ancient Greece. Check it out.
As one does.
I can only hope that in Wonder Woman 2 there's like some sort of Brady Bunch like Easter egg in it for like people to be like, ha ha ha, Turnabout is fair play now.
I've never seen the cartoon, so I hope it's a reference to the show and that somehow there's a haunted tiki idol kind of tarantula.
Vincent Price
is dead. Vincent Price,
oh, yeah,
yes.
He's the voice of Iron Tile on like that Here Comes Peter content.
And he also played himself in one of the latter day Scooby Doo iterations.
Yeah, right,
the 13 Ghosts of Scooby Doo.
The new Scooby Doo movies? That was the one about the celebrity.
The new Scooby Doo movies was like the celebrity guest where it's like Batman and Robin and Sandy Duncan and Charles Nelson Reilly or whatever.
Yep.
There was like a show in the 80s called The 13 Ghosts of Scooby Doo where Vincent Price was just sort of like his Alfred. He was like Scooby Doo's Alfred and he'd just be like, Scooby, you must go find this ancient Ankh. So, that's a really bad Vincent Price.
No, it's not bad. Actually, here's a good question. So, there was definitely that period of time, especially with the Hanna-Barbera, Scooby-Doo, mm-hmm. Josie and the Pussycats realm, where it would be like, and now they're teaming up with the Harlem Globetrotters,
yes.
or Vincent Price, or like a celebrity kind of thing.
Sure.
And that stopped after a while. It didn't quite go away entirely. Every now and then you'd have a celebrity voice cameo. But why do you think that went away?
That was the format for that season. That they did one season, I think, called the New Scooby-Doo Movies. And that was the premise, was every show had a celebrity guest on it.
Yeah, so when
either real, like Davy Jones or Mama Cass Elliot, or fictional like Batman and Robin.
Do we know why that thing stopped happening, apart from the fact that
it's stupid? They just kept reformatting. That was the reason Scooby-Doo was on the air as long as it was because they kept selling it to the networks, pitching it as, okay, we're going to do it this way now.
Okay.
We're going to add that. That's why Scrappy-Doo exists.
Oh, God. You
know, as hated as Scrappy-Doo is.
History's greatest monster.
Scrappy-Doo saved that show. They would not have picked it up for another season without the pitch of, we're going to add this new character, Scrappy-Doo.
What's it? Is it Six Flags that has this, the Scooby-Doo characters at the theme parks?
Yeah, I think so.
I think we were there, and I think somebody was wearing a Scrappy-Doo outfit, and I felt so bad for them. You spend your day getting kicked, don't you? I'm sorry.
I mean, Scooby was probably the most successful of the Hanna-Barbera characters. Even to this day, they're still making these cartoons. Oh, we're saying with Mindy Cohn now. Mindy Cohn from Facts of Life is the voice of Velma now.
You know,
they're still making Scooby cartoons today.
That's cool.
But Hanna-Barbera was just ripping off themselves. Like, every cartoon they put out was a Scooby-Doo format for a while through the mid-70s. Like The Funky Phantom, Clue Club.
Mm-hmm. Jabberjaw.
Jabberjaw.
Goober. To an extent, Josie and the Pussycats was that.
Yeah, Goober and the Ghost Chasers.
Were they Archie's stuff, or were they a
Speed Buggy?
I think they were in the
every format. It was a bunch of teens solving mysteries. That was every show they made for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the Scooby-Doo format, because it wasn't violent, it was people being chased, that was the network's reaction to these parental advocacy groups trying to stop Saturday mornings from destroying the minds of young children, which I think was originated in Boston. It was a woman named Peggy Sharon who started Action for Children's Television.
Oh God!
Who I'd read about as a kid and be like, "Why is this woman ruining my life?"
No, I love it. I love the idea that they were like, "We don't want children to be violent, so instead we're going to inundate them with shows where all children realize all adults are liars and shouldn't be trusted." That's much better. We'll just teach them. That's great. Yeah.
Well, and then the stock plot became like, everything has to be about cooperation. And if any kid is individualized and away from the group, they're going to be punished for it and have to go back and be like, I was wrong. I should have gone along with everyone else. You know, like Ralph Mouth the Cavalier on Dungeons and Dragons show, how he'd always be like, this is a terrible idea, and he'd always be proven wrong.
Yeah. A lot of shows got very concerned with teaching you a lesson, and that was, Fred Flintstone was not trying to teach us a lesson, but Bugs Bunny never tried to teach anybody anything.
He taught me that smoking cigarettes was a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah, by the time that the 70s were rolling, and especially Filmation was not subtle. Filmation would just come out, Shazam, Captain Marvel, would come out at the end of the show and just lecture you about what have we learned today. And then He-Man eventually would do that as well.
It was also Filmation.
Yeah. They would just clobber you with the lesson.
Yes, because they took the Japanese version and had to tag a thing onto it and be like, today they fought evil version Malachite or something, and that's like not smoking. Yeah. Okay, so.
Did you ever, do you remember the theme songs?
Well, didn't you hear these two bust out the Alf song like 15 minutes ago?
I got brain cells that could be used for fighting cancer, but no.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I can't do math in my head, but I can sing the Gummy Bear song.
Oh, yeah.
Get along, gang, get along, gang. Each one is special in his own way. Her own way. Their own way. For heaven's sakes, yes.
It's the show that taught kids how much fun it is to be in a gang.
It's a show that taught kids how to write bad television.
Yeah.
But, how catchy all these songs were, I wanted to get into PSAs a little bit.
Mm.
Especially the king of PSAs, of course, is Schoolhouse Rock. The reason that was so successful was the songs were just so great, so super catchy and memorable. And that was the guy that created Schoolhouse Rock. He realized his kids couldn't learn multiplication, but they knew all the words to every song on Top 40 Radio. So it was like, let's make multiplication songs.
Yes.
And that's how it started. Then they started doing animated versions. And the show that we're watching is over, but now here's an extra 4-minute thing. And they were so great that we had no idea we were learning the preamble to the Constitution.
Yeah, Div, have you heard the, oh gosh, they released it years ago, is a bunch of like pop bands did covers of them.
Yes.
And how long ago it was is Blind Melon did Three as a Magic Number.
I think it was called
Shannon Hoon died in like 1999.
I think it was called like Schoolhouse Rocks. Rocks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Totally.
It came out in the mid-90s. It's fantastic.
Well, they got like actual people from the music industry to appear on school. They
got
like Blossom Dearie sang a bunch of it, and
Skilo is the one who does Mr. Morton as the subject of my sentence as a rap, which so choice.
I mean, those songs are top shelf, I think.
Yeah, the original recordings. Yeah, Jack Sheldon is the voice of I'm Just a Bill in Conjunction Junction, which is just one of the great vocalists of all time.
Didn't they get him back to do the Simpsons parody of that?
Yeah.
I feel like they got the same.
An amendment to be, yes, an amendment to be.
Yeah, I mean, they were still making. They've done more Schoolhouse Rock cartoons in relatively recent years. They made a bunch more in the 90s.
Yeah.
They finally did a preposition song, which was the one missing part of speech from back in the 70s. And Mr. Morton, that was from the 90s as well. And even in the 2000s, they made another batch of them. And it was still the original songwriters and a lot of the original vocalists they kept bringing back. Time for Timer, I love also. That was not Schoolhouse Rock, but all those Nutrition.
You ever get that hungry feeling after school? Boy, I do. I'm so hungry, I could eat a wagon wheel.
And I always wondered what the character was.
Yeah, it's just a big, weird, yellow blob.
I thought he was a wheel of cheese.
Me too.
I thought it was like a whole thing about like cannibalism.
I thought maybe he was an egg or like an egg timer. I guess maybe he's supposed to be an egg timer. But he's so lumpy.
Time for Timer.
Yeah, I was watching some One to Grow Ons in anticipation of this panel. And I realized like the stars in One to Grow On, what child cares who Perry King is. And he's like, I'm Perry King. Don't. And then they'd be like a little playlet of two kids like being terrible to each other. And
the one that I always tend to quote, and now thank God for YouTube, but the we're not candy. Oh no. Like the little blue pills that like in like the tipped over bottle is like strange little Moomin Shans sort of like animated SOS Brillo pads. And I'm like, yeah, that's a message that's gonna haunt me forever. Like we don't need any more anthropomorphic things that I'm going to eat. I feel bad enough already.
Google for Cocoa Puffs. Who wants to eat cereal that sends you into a psychotic episode?
Yo, me.
Me.
That milk after the cereal was more chocolate than the cereal. Yeah. And that's what the, like, you just soak it. Like, you steep it like tea, and then scoop the Choco Puffs out.
Apple Jacks were as far as I was allowed with the sugar cereal. Like, I couldn't do marshmallows. I couldn't
do
chocolate. But, like, every now and then, if I was very good, I love Apple Jacks to begin with, so that was all right. But
didn't taste anything like apples.
No, that was like a commercial in the 90s with all the kids being like,
"But
they don't taste like apples."
We don't care because we like high fructose corn syrup.
I feel like achieving nirvana is eating the cereal of the show while you're watching it.
Yeah.
I'm eating Mr. T's while watching Mr. T.
Mr. T's were good.
Inception.
They were good.
Yeah.
They were like, I mean, they tasted a lot like Captain Crunch, but they didn't cut your mouth like Captain Crunch. You're right. That was the best. Yes.
I want to join a gymnastics team. I will say, as an adult, like looking back on Saturday morning cartoons, it is really fun to watch opening theme songs to Saturday morning cartoons I watched as a child, and it is really not fun to watch the actual episodes themselves.
Yeah, with a few exceptions.
Yeah.
So what holds up for you?
Well, my daughter, who's three, she just really got into Pee-wee's Playhouse, and that plays like gangbusters with her, and I love watching it too.
It's still good.
Yeah.
It's better now that I'm, an adult and kind of know what was happening in the alternative, like, scene in L.A. around the 80s. And
yes.
I can sort of pick up on, like, wow, that is coded very queer.
The Christmas special, especially.
Yeah.
The Pee-wee Christmas special is so gay.
Yep.
Like, I'm astounded by
way.
It.
In a wonderful way.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, no, totally. And just seeing, like, references to, like, Church of the Subgenius in there. So that really holds up for me right now. I'm going to see what else plays with her as she gets a little older. But a lot of the ones where I was trying to watch, like, just some random episodes of stuff, and I fall asleep real quick, like Alvin and the Chipmunks. And
a lot of them can be a bit of a chore to get through. But
Thunder the Barbarian
totally holds up. Absolutely,
they based it off of Jack Kirby stuff.
Yeah, Jack Kirby designed a lot of the characters for Thunder the Barbarian, and a lot of them you can tell. A lot of the villains on Thundar absolutely look like Kirby characters. Thundar is a fantastic show. That was like 1980 from Ruby Spears.
Yes.
Post-apocalyptic future with wizards and monsters and whatnot.
I want to do a quick plug. Tomorrow at 4 p.m. in this room is a Jack Kirby panel at Origin that you should all come to.
Awesome.
Nice.
What holds up for...
Oh, gosh. I don't... I don't know. You know, the problem is because the early 2000s did such a good job of lampooning a lot of this stuff. Mm. When Cartoon Network got the rights to all of the Hanna-Barbera stuff, I like end up watching a lot more of Space Ghost Coast to Coast or Harvey Birdman Attorney at Law. So I go back and I'm like, I'm just gonna watch the episode with the Flintstones where it's like the Sopranos. They changed the theme song to Got No Pants or Shoes.
Right? Woke up this morning.
Yeah. I don't know. I will say there are a couple that I have like sought out. I know before the panel, one of the ones that I listed was, there was one I loved, and I think it was early 90s and not 80s, but does anyone else remember Cadillacs and Dinosaurs? Like, the entire conceit of the show is, humans bombed the planet, we all went underground, and when we came back, dinosaurs.
Nice.
Right. And that's, like, literally it, and, like the main guy, it's like this pulp novel, so the main guy is this guy named Jack Tenrek, and he's got, the square chiseled jaw, and he's a mechanic. Who is also like a warrior priest class. And then his sidekick partner is this brunette leggy dame named Hannah Dundee. Very formative. Very formative for baby Karen. Hannah Dundee. And then they like, the dinosaurs all have weird names. They're like, this is everything I want. It's like two-fisted pulp, leggy dames, dinosaurs. It's like they just went into like a lab and like, what can we make a cartoon for Karen? And it's awesome. It's got a female character that isn't in pink. Yeah. And she was like a scientist and a diplomat. And I'm like, sure, just keep Barbie-fying her. I don't care.
And that was a comic book as well.
Yeah, Xenozoic Tales
by Mark Schultz. Cool stuff.
So, Garfield and Friends doesn't hold up, but the reason it doesn't hold up isn't that, like, you're watching it as an adult, like, oh, this is so boring and looks stupid and trite. It doesn't hold up because breaking the fourth wall is sort of like, everybody does it now. But if you kind of take that mindset out, it's like, actually, this must have been pretty funny at the time, even for adults, because they're always referring to the scripts and the, you know, in this episode, this has happened. Parts of it are great. I still love the Video Airlines episode, one of my favorite pieces of television ever. They're looking to rent a videotape. And the only videotape that's at any store is this terrible movie called Kung Fu Creatures on the Rampage 2, which they don't want to watch. It looks stupid. And it's on TV, and like they can't get away from it. Let's check the Spanish channel. It's that movie, but in Spanish. Fine, let's just go to the movie theater. Only movie that there's tickets for is Kung Fu Creatures on the Rampage 3. The way it's set, like, it goes from, like, point to point to point to point is really an amazing deployment of a recurring running gag that actually just totally works. Because it's like, all the same basic scene. Guy, girl, you're not Sylvia. You're one of the Kung Fu Creatures on the Rampage 2! It works so well, and I've just given away the entire episode. There's no point in watching it. Yeah.
The other thing that holds it for me is like the Looney Tunes stuff, which I know wasn't specifically designed for Saturday morning, but it was such a staple.
These are cartoons that were made for adults to watch before the movies in the 30s, 40s, 50s. So they were so beautifully made and made on a big budget.
Fully orchestrated.
Yeah, and you know, the voice talent was fantastic. The music's great. The most brilliant animation directors, Chuck Jones and so on. And yeah, they weren't made for Saturday morning, but they really became such a part of Saturday morning.
It's funny, we were earlier mentioning the Friday night, here's what you're watching tomorrow, and I very vividly remember sitting down to my VHS, getting ready to press record, and it was the season that Tiny Toons came out, and I was like, what do they think they're doing? There's no way they can recapture the magic of the Looney Tunes cartoons. This is preposterous! Of course the girl bunny is pink. And then of course I watch it, and I'm like, this is goddamn genius.
Yep.
This cartoon is amazing.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's getting away from Saturday mornings, but, like, that whole mini renaissance that WB had in the 90s, like, with Animaniacs.
Anything with Steven Spielberg's name on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Came out glorious.
Yeah, that's the thrust of the animation business. TV animation was shifting from Saturday morning to the syndicated afternoon stuff, and it started with He-Man and G.I. Joe, and then all those Disney and Warner shows that came out in the late 80s, early 90s, and that new renaissance of animation. That's as Saturday morning was dying, it was moving to that new format.
Disney still did have two great, like, last gasp Saturday morning shows, I would say. Actually, I'd say three, actually. I'd say
Darkwing Duck.
That's during the week, yeah. But in terms of Saturday morning, Gummy Bears is really good, actually. Yep. It's still really good. ABC's Recess is amazingly funny. Recess is great. And it's post this era, really. It's early 2000s, right? Like late 90s. It's so funny. Pepper Ann is so good. Yeah. I watched Pepper Ann when I was in my early 20s because I thought it was that funny, right? They had that little thing. And even if they're sort of killing it a little bit, they also, let's get in on this. But they just
And I also think like the last kind of golden age for Saturday morning cartoons was Fox in the 90s, where they had
Batman
and Robin and the X-Men, and which is interesting because like in the 60s, all of the cartoons were superheroes. Then it came full circle back. And I think that was right before Saturday morning cartoons as a cultural thing that people experienced like went away totally.
Sure.
Yeah. I remember bringing my TV to college and getting my roommate hopelessly addicted to the Earthworm Jim cartoon. Because that cartoon was amazing. At the end of every episode, they dropped a cow on somebody. It was just great for like no reason whatsoever. But then as I got older, like the harder it was for me. It's funny, because I started Saturday morning cartoons waking up and not knowing what time it was. And then as I got older, I would wake up and be like, oh, why is it that time?
Yep.
But, I mean, the thing that truly kind of killed Saturday morning for me, there was a tiny window a few years ago where I think it was Cartoon Network. They used to have, it was DC Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and they even had, like, the cartoons in between. So you could watch, like, Young Justice and then have a couple of DC shorts and then, like, the Green Lantern cartoon and then Nickelodeon, I think, was running, like, a new Ninja Turtle cartoon. Then it was, like, brilliant. I was in my, you know, and I could get up and I have my bowl of cereal. We had TiVo, so I could start it a little later as I want. But, yeah, it was fantastic. I'd get up and I'd watch these cartoons, and then I found out that they were canceling Young Justice and the Green Lantern animated series because apparently they had too large a female fan base and boys wouldn't watch.
Can't have that. Some of those shorts, those DC shorts, as a DC fan, like, they're doing Sword of the Atom. They're doing Amethyst. They're doing Vibe.
Animal Man. Voiced by Weird Al Yankovic.
Yes.
And anytime he does anything, Animal Man! Like, it's so ridiculous. They have one, if you haven't seen them, seriously, go on YouTube. They got Aardman, the guy who does Wallace and Gromit, basically does audio recordings of these little kids and then claymates them as if they're Catwoman or whatever. And there's one of just the Joker. Do you like my shoes? I like my shoes. Yeah, they were doing all sorts of, like, just experimental animation, like the stuff that you just won't see anywhere else. And then they canned it, and I can't help but also wonder how much streaming has played a role.
I think cable and streaming, totally. Like, my daughter likes this show called Peppa Pig, and she can watch it whenever she wants. Like, when I was a kid, it was, you know, if I liked a show, it was on, you know, this one time once a week. And
if you were lucky, they maybe replayed it during the summer.
Yeah, and, you know, now it's like, if you like a show, you can just watch it whenever. And I don't know if necessarily that's better or worse, but it's definitely different.
I think the studios are having trouble figuring out how the business works anymore because it's just everybody's on their phones and their iPads and streaming. And what does a TV show mean anymore? Because it can exist in so many different strange platforms. We have friends who created a show for Cartoon Network called Mighty Magiswords. It's been on for a couple of years, though. There's a good friends of the Flopcast that made that show. It's just insane. But it started as like a game for the Cartoon Network app. They made like little 1 or 2 minute versions of the show, you know, like a choose which way you want to go kind of game. And then eventually they made the longer versions that would air on Cartoon Network.
Oh, that's so cool.
So there's just so many different strange ways to release things these days.
Yeah, now if you look at the Cartoon Network lineup, it's like 7 hours of nothing but 10-minute Teen Titans Go episodes. Don't get me wrong, I effing love the Teen Titans. That's a lot of Teen Titans.
Yeah, it's a little too much.
Original Teen Titans is much better.
Yes.
I agree.
Yes. Yeah.
But I also like the new one, but the original one, and that was an example of, like, this has too big a female fan base, boys won't like it. And it's like, because you made characters I care about? Like, come on.
No. See, I unfortunately had beef with Ciro Neely, who was the guy who was the showrunner for Teen Titans. I interviewed him on a Ninja Turtle podcast I was on, and I was asking him about season 2 and whether or not season 2 would pass the Bechdel test, because I had heard, and I'm going to take this in a side tangent, I apologize, I had heard that they were going to have Irma from the original 80s cartoon on, and I wanted them to say it, but without, like, spoiling anything, and he had no idea what the Bechdel test was, and instead of asking, he went pontificating off on a tangent. And he's like, well, there's the problem with female characters. They get too powerful and difficult to write. So we have our good girl and we have our bad girl, and that's all we need. And I just kind of like sat back and I'm like, I'm going to just let this wash over me.
Oh, no.
And I'm going to wait. And then he misgendered me online. And I was like, all right, dude, we are done professionally. Which is a shame because he's like a really nice dude, but he's apparently not very good at his job.
I turn on the Boomerang channel these days once in a while. All they show is Scooby-Doo and Tom and Jerry.
Now, is it all Tom and Jerry? Because I have to admit, I love Tom and Jerry until they started getting a little of the psychedelic 60s. Then for some reason, I was like, this is unnerving and off-putting to me. Like, as a child, I'm like, I have to back away from Tom and Jerry.
There were some Tom and Jerry episodes, like the older ones, where, like, they hated each other. And then suddenly, if you watch the newer ones, like, they're working together. And they'd show those on at least Channel 56, like,
yes,
kind of around the same time. And it's like, am I supposed to be? But they, no, hold on. And it was a little weird.
Where are you in your relationship?
Exactly. There's no arc here. I'm six. No.
Continuity in Tom and Jerry is completely screwed up.
Dear sir or madam, courtesy of TV56, I, a six-year-old boy, do declare that you are running these episodes out of order, messing up the continuity of the timeline between Tom and Jerry. Are they friends? Are they not? Do they have a love-hate relationship? Is this like Sam and Diane on Cheers? Ergo. Or is it like Beatrice and Benedict from Much Ado About Nothing, a play, of course, I know nothing about, for I am 6 years old. Sincerely.
See, now, there's sometimes...
If only there was an internet then.
Mm.
I'm so glad there wasn't. No, I like it there. The one thing I remember you mentioned, continuity errors, I remember watching the X-Men cartoon as it aired, and they actually aired a couple episodes out of order.
Yeah.
So there was like an episode where it was like, do-do-do-do-do, and then you go to the next episode, and the X-Mansion was destroyed. And there was no reason why the X-Mansion was destroyed, and I was like, this is just like reading the comic book. I have no idea what's going on. I've been here the whole time. They're geniuses. Meanwhile, it's some intern going, oh, crap, I put the wrong tape in the deck.
I think my introduction to the X-Men was on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A nice X-Men episode on that.
They had like each episode would have a different corner of the Marvel Universe guest star.
Yeah, they mixed a lot of Marvel guests in. That was a great show. That was a quality show.
Mm-hmm.
Introduced
Firestar,
was it?
Yeah, because they had Iceman, who was one of the original X-Men. His Amazing Friends were Iceman and Firestar, who was created for the show.
It was on Netflix for a while. I don't think it is anymore.
And there was an episode where they were all trying to hang out, and Spider-Man was trying to keep them both happy, right? And, like, they went to the beach, and Iceman didn't want to be there, and they went to the movie theater, but it was, like, too cold and the air conditioning for Firestar. Like, that was interesting.
Iceman went into that hot house at the end, and then the magician, the evil magician, slammed the door shut, and he melted. Maybe thinking of Frosty the Snowman.
Yeah, I think so.
Iceman's made out of Christmas snow.
Again, someday.
Frosty is the most terrible special ever. You had a question. Yes.
I was surprised when sort of the mini renaissance of Nickelodeon and Disney in the 90s. Things like, you know, they're Rugrats, SpongeBob.
I think it's more, like, this is my own sort of biases, but if it's not on network television, I don't consider it a Saturday morning cartoon. If it's on Saturday morning,
if you have to pay to see it, it's not Saturday morning.
Exactly.
The whole point is them trying to shill stuff to you.
Yeah.
After the fact,
especially shill stuff to kids whose parents like can't afford cable because like, mom, I want all these things. You can't have them. Okay. Invader Zim.
Who thought it was a good idea to give Jan and Vasquez a cartoon show for children?
I'm so glad they did that.
I mean, I'm so glad they did as well. But I wanted to be in on that meeting.
Have you ever cosplayed Gaz? Because you should cosplay Gaz.
No.
Like for real.
Gonna.
Yeah.
I wanted to, but before we wrap up, if there's kind of weird, obscure shows that we haven't mentioned yet that maybe we want to, because there's so many just freaky, almost forgotten stuff from years past. And I know that when we were getting ready to prepare for this, one of you mentioned Turbo Teen.
I think that was me.
That was you.
Yeah.
Does everybody know Turbo Teen?
It introduced body horror to Saturday morning, where he was like a teen who could also turn into a car and drive around.
And
his face would stretch out, and he'd go, like, that gave me nightmares.
Yeah.
It's Transformers, but he's not a robot. He's a real boy.
Lancelot
Link, Secret Chip. This is live action. Live action chip.
My favorite obscure Saturday morning thing, this was live action, I think it ran for 3 or 4 episodes, was a thing on NBC called Too Hip for TV.
Oh, yeah. Colin Quinn.
Yeah, it was hosted by Colin Quinn and Ahmet Zappa. It took place in a bowling alley. They would chain smoke through the whole thing. And they'd have like musical, like the Stray Cats would be on it, or the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And that was possibly like one of my first introductions to you know, kind of underground music on Saturday morning TV. So, yeah. And then, and I was like, this is amazing. And then it went away.
Galaxy High.
Yes!
Is still good.
Is
right?
It really?
Yes! It's still, I watched a couple episodes, like, prepping for this, right? And I'm like, I mostly remember the theme song, because it's great, and there's a bell corner. And, yeah.
Galaxy High.
And I'm like, I wonder if this is still good. First, the character design is really creative. It's really, it's just fascinating. I'm surprised it only lasted a year or two, because it, like, is gorgeous to look at. The stories are fine. It's funny. It's clever. They can go outside. The idea being that there's two teenagers from Earth who are... The girl's the brainiest one in school. The guy's the jock, and he's the football hero. She's not popular. She's kind of a nerd. He's super popular. They get picked to go to school on a space station full of aliens, and they're the two Earthlings there. She becomes the super popular one. The jock is like, I don't know what the hell's going on here. And their friends kind of try to help them out, and they have like this gaggle of different alien buddies, and it's really good.
So I got two. One is live action, one is not. Does anyone else remember Dr. Fad?
Yes.
The guy who invented the wacky wall walker had a show where kids could come in and compete with their own inventions.
Yes.
And he had like a jacket covered in wacky wall walkers. And the other one that I love, but it is somewhat live action and somewhat cartoon, Kid Video.
Yes.
With Cousin Oliver all grown up.
Yes.
And there was like a fairy in like the aerobics with the leg
leotards,
warmers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, God, I love that
I'm
show.
I'm taking you to the flip side.
Yeah, the opening credits part was live action. Then it was animated for the rest of the show.
Yeah.
I love that scene in the opening credits where like Kid Video is doing something. He looks up at the screen and goes, yeah.
And then does anyone remember the name of the voice of the guy who was Master Blaster, the bad guy?
No.
No, me neither. Yeah, all right. But it was they had an awesome voice.
Do you have the album? There's a Kid Video album.
Shut up!
It was not released in America. It was released in Israel, I think. But poke around online. You can get yourself a whole album.
Kid Video is the David Hasselhoff of Israel.
I've got an album's worth of Kid Video on this phone right now, Karen.
What's that over there?
What are we doing in this panel?
And that's when Karen disappeared and never heard from again.
You know, speaking of Robbie Rist, I have a weird, obscure Saturday morning show also that also involves Robbie. Robbie Rist was the little blonde kid, Big John, Little John. Merlin's one step ahead of me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Big John, Little John, he was an adult man. He was a school teacher, I think. And then he drank from the fountain of youth. And then every once in a while, he couldn't control it, but he would suddenly transform into a little kid, into Robbie Rist. Mm-hmm.
Was the older guy?
He was still married. It was really creepy and weird.
Was the older guy played by John Denver? Because John Denver and Ron Rist were so
totally should have cast
him. Very Ranma one half sort of a scenario there. Hello, somebody else's wife.
Very strange. Very very goofy shows. A show which Schwartz produced it, who had worked with Robbie Rist on Brady Bunch, obviously. Yes, that's a weird
one. He's one of my favorite. I have a Ninja Turtle solution. And he is one of my favorite voice actors from the original live action movies. He plays Michelangelo. I was like, oh, Cousin Oliver, yes!
There was a live action show also in the 70s, I think, called Run, Joe, Run. Yeah, and this was the premise is, it's what if the fugitive was a dog? This was a dog that was wanted for a crime it did not commit, and it was on the run.
What, was he on the run from another dog?
No, from humans. We're trying to capture him.
He should have formed an all-dog A-team.
Or there should have been an A-team crossover. If you can find them, you can call upon the A-team.
It wasn't me. It was the three-pod cat.
The dog A-team now is Paw Patrol. Yeah, kids. I got Top Cat.
Top Cat was great. I've just been watching Top Cat recently. That holds up.
I'm going to go to Etsy, and what I want to find is a medicine cabinet that looks like a police box. So that way I can put my toothbrush in there, like Top Cat did. Every time I watch it, I'm like, I want that. Yeah. I don't know why I needed to have a toothbrush in a cup on a telephone pole in an hour, but I needed it in a way that I didn't need many other things.
But like, I watched Top Cat as a kid, and then like when I got older and I saw like Sergeant Bilko, and I'm like, this is just a ripoff of Top Cat.
Those early Hanna-Barbera stuff, like Top Cat, holds up. Those were so just lovingly produced, obviously, and the voice talent was just the best. And I was reading about Hanna-Barbera recently because Joe Barbera was the pitch man. He would sell shows to the networks. Obviously, he was really good at it because they just dominated Saturday morning to all three networks. They just sold so many shows. But he would just pitch and pitch and pitch and pitch and combine shows and veer and change. If they didn't like what he was saying, he would just switch and just keep talking until they agreed to buy a show from him. And so you ended up with some weird combination kind of shows as a result. And you can kind of see the bones of how that happened in some shows, I think, like Captain Caveman, remember?
It was
Captain Caveman and the Teen Angels, which was like a sort of a take on Charlie's Angels, which was big at the time. So that kind of combo thing, I'm guessing, happened because of those crazy Joe Barbera pitch meetings. But the really weird one I wanted to mention, Benji, Zax, and the Alien Prince.
I remember
this was an alien prince who had to leave his home planet. He came to Earth. He had a robot. That was Zax. The robot kind of looked like Wally. And Benji, as in the dog. That dog, Benji, that they made all those Benji movies. This was Benji, the dog, with an alien and a robot. And that was a Hanna-Barbera produced live-action show, and I'm guessing that was another one of those bizarre Barbera pitch meetings where nobody knew what was going to come out of it.
Well, later on, Captain Caveman teamed up with Wilma and Betty.
Yeah, they did. It was like a Superman kind of take, where Captain Caveman was secretly working like as a Clark Kent type. They all worked at a newspaper back in cave times. Anybody in the audience have any favorites that we haven't mentioned?
My favorite Saturday morning cartoon is probably Jackie Chan Adventures.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It did go on for too long, but I don't care because it was really funny. It had the best jokes.
Did Jackie Chan do the voice on that?
No, Jackie Chan didn't do the voiceover, but he'd do the after show, maybe more little thing.
Okay, so real Jackie Chan would come on at the end? Cool.
But I think someone else did animated Jackie Chan voice.
Yeah.
He spent many a Saturday morning with a package of saltines and Mr. Magoo. I always, he frustrated me to no end. I would end up yelling at him, "No, just don't! Stop, Mr. Magoo!"
Is this like a What's New, Mr. Magoo kind of thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
New York, New Jersey. That was the big joke in the
song. As opposed to original semi-racist Magoo cartoons. By semi-racist, I mean totally racist.
I was so young, I did not remember the original ones, but I did watch What's New, Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, although for me, Magoo begins and ends with Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol.
Yeah,
which is the greatest thing that ever happened.
Right, the only Magoo shows that I liked were the famous Adventures of Mr. Magoo, which actually sprung out of Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol, where he would act out roles like Don Quixote, or One of the Three Musketeers, or Friar Tuck and Robin Hood.
Yes.
I remember I really liked Fillmore.
Fillmore? I don't know that one.
It's the one that's you stumped the panel. Show set in the middle school.
Oh,
yeah, cool.
So like Brick?
Yeah. They were treated like they're actually cops with like, turn in your badge because you're just too much of a maverick.
Oh, I gotta check this out.
Yeah.
I was hoping it was about Millard Fillmore. Yeah. Like the wacky adventures of our 13th president. Like,
but in high
that's,
school.
Even high school. No, that sounds awesome though. Yeah.
Unfunny conservative joke starring an anthropomorphic duck.
Oh god, Millard Fillmore. Yeah. No.
Wait, when was Count Duckula on?
It wasn't a Saturday thing, was it?
It was a movie.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Throw two quick things. Land of the Lost. Yes. Mm. It's the fact, no matter how uncomfortable they were, the Slee Stack were still kind of cool.
They were so super cool.
Yeah.
Could not get cooler than a Slee Stack.
And Hong Kong Phooey, only for Scatman Crothers doing the voice.
Yeah. There was one super guy.
Land of the Lost was so great. It ran for three seasons originally, which was way longer than anything else the Crofts ever did. They brought it back in 91. Yep. They did a whole new version.
Close the story to a degree in the original.
The Crofts put so much care into Land of the Lost in that they hired serious science fiction writers to write the scripts. They hired a linguist to write a language for Chaka and the Pikuni to speak. Yeah. They invented a language for
and
these little cave people to speak.
And they hired a middle school AV club to do the special effects.
They had to cut some corners somewhere.
The shows, the televisions that were available at the time, I had a 9-inch black and white. The special effects on the 9-inch black and white, The Land of the Lost, looked
well, has anyone seen, like, I know this is not Saturday, but it speaks to that, what the Addams Family house really looked like? In order to get the blacks, that gradient, that house is pink. Everything in that house is like, there's like that quote from Steel Magnolias, it looks like somebody hosed it down with Pepto-Bismol. Like, everything is varying shades of, like, red and pink. It's awesome. You check that out. But because it was going to be on a black and white TV, and they wanted, like, several different kinds of black.
That's cool.
The Addams Family and the Brady Kids had that Saturday morning
cartoons. I always thought it would have been great if Marsha Brady had babysat Wednesday and Pugsley.
They should have done that. I agree.
It's like the Munsters. Isn't that like the one normal person in the Munsters?
Yeah. Well, the
Marion?
Marilyn.
Marilyn.
Yeah. I mean, that tradition of taking like the show for quote unquote adults or the weekday sitcom and turning it into a cartoon, like, was such a fascinating thing. It even continued to the 80s when there's the Punky Brewster cartoon.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Fonz and the Happy Days Gang.
Fonz and the Happy Days Gang.
Which they traveled through time in a flying saucer.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, with cupcakes.
Yep.
Let's take this show you like and remove all of the elements that make it good, and now it's a cartoon.
With Punky, I actually kind of worried. It was basically the show, but with a little floating
Glomer.
Yeah, a little, like, troll guy. Yeah. He was from a place called Vanadoon or something.
Sure.
But he was a magical troll person. But, you know, she was still living with Henry, and, you know, Cherry was still her friend. Like, there was basically the show, but with magical realism. It was so good.
They did Laverne and Shirley in the Army.
Yeah. That's
a Saturday morning cartoon.
To capitalize on the love children had for Private Benjamin.
Well, Saturday morning would be influenced by just whatever was happening. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like, after Jaws came out in 75, 1976, we got Jabberjaw, and we got Mr. Jaw. There were two shark cartoons where they rushed on the next season.
I'm always amazed. It's a little bit like... It's a little bit like disease. Hold on. Let me get there. But it's like you have this disease that like kills a bunch of adults, and then eventually it morphs into something for children, like chicken pox.
Yeah.
You know, at one point was really kind of bad. Like, well, I mean, it's still bad, but I mean, now it's like something little kids get.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like now we have like, who looked at the Ghostbusters movie, the original one with, you know, Bill Murray and Harold Ramis, and thought we should market this for children? Because there's nothing in that movie that should be marketed to children. And yet that cartoon was awesome.
Have you seen Movie Bob's really that good about it?
No.
Oh, you need to see this.
Because
you like Movie Bob. Yeah.
I love Movie Bob.
So he does a series called... He's here at this con, actually.
Shut up!
Yeah, he's on panels that are not this one. But he should be on this one, I feel. But, like...
This is being recorded, so I shouldn't mention that I'm now going to stalk Movie Bob. Can we edit that in post? That's something we do on our podcast.
This is a YouTube movie reviewer who does a lot of nostalgia-ish stuff as well. And he has a long-form series he comes out with every couple of months called Really That Good, and takes a classic film and talks about, okay, here's why it actually works. Like Christmas Story, Titanic, Vacation, like movies that everyone kind of says everybody loves, but you don't really, you know why. Ghostbusters is the first one he did. And he actually does a pretty good explanation as part of this like 40-minute thing about why that movie, which was made for adults, there's no kids in it. It's about starting a business, for heaven's sakes, and fighting God, appealed to kids so much. And it's a pretty good case. Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I love that cartoon. The real Ghostbusters are...
Yeah, yes. The Slimer.
But there were plenty of cases where they would take a rather adult movie or show and then make the Toxic Avenger.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yep.
Yeah, I tried to watch that movie not knowing anything about Troma Studios and was like, well, hello there.
Yeah, does anyone remember the 9.5 weeks cartoon?
Rubik's Cube cartoon where like
Rubik the Amazing Cube.
They had like video game cartoons like Pac-Man, Pitfall.
Yeah.
They're all like Saturday Supercade.
Hubert and
what was the Nintendo one with Kid Icarus and
Captain N. Game Master. Yeah, when you were talking about all the stuff you wanted from, like, Saturday morning cartoons as kids, like, I wanted to be Captain N. I wanted a blaster that worked. It'd be awesome to go in that world. That was pretty good, actually. That still kind of holds up.
It was commercial, but it was pretty good.
It was. Well, again, there were stories. It was built off of characters kids knew already, and it's clearly, like, selling you games, but you might already have those games already, and that's why you think it's interesting. I don't know.
I think we have time for one more, and that'd be you.
We talked about serious movies that were brought into animated series. How about, like, Star Trek, the animated series?
Sure.
They tried to do a good job with it.
Yeah, that was Filmation in the 70s, did the Star Trek cartoon. They did Planet of the Apes cartoon.
Yes.
Yeah, they were trying everything back then.
So when are y'all doing the gender swap to More Tribbles, More Troubles? It's like...
No, I made the mistake of trying to watch that cartoon show while maybe slightly more intoxicated than a human ought to be. I'm permanently scarred now by the Star Trek TV show. I'm like, the cartoon. I'm like, nope, that's a little Uncanny Valley for me, nope.
There were a couple good ones. I think Gerald wrote a couple. David Gerald, Michael Ian something or other. What's his name? Wrote a couple. People actually did, like actual science fiction authors did attempt to write them.
Is there anything else that someone was really hoping and dreaming that we would discuss? Because we got just a minute left, maybe.
Let's start one bizarre thought. Your very first suspension of belief as a kid watching something. And I'll give an example of myself. Is the old Birdman cartoon, where he's looking for a villain called Pintos or something like that, and he can't find him. Even though he's flying over a mountain range with a mountain with a giant M carved on its side. And it's looking like,
I can tell you specifically when it was, and it is the dorkiest thing anyone's ever said in the history of ever. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. Muppet Babies breaks established canon. I was like seven. I'm like, hang on. I saw the movie. That's not what. No.
That's how I felt about all the Care Bears movies. We covered this in the last movie. Why are we retreading on this ground?
All right, well, my goal in this panel was for Karen to be furious about the Care Bears. And,
achievement unlocked.
Yeah, let's say thanks to Kevin, to Andy, and to Karen, and all of you to spend Saturday morning here at Aresia talking Saturday morning cartoons. Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of Aresia.
Okay, there's the panel. Man, that was fun. I feel like I should be chomping on cereal right now. It actually is. This is Saturday morning as I'm recording this. But I do not have any cereal right now. I've got my coffee, as usual. You know, coffee is required to record for the Flopcast, and so I do have my coffee. I should have been chomping on Cookie Crisp through this entire recording. Wouldn't that have been pleasant? But thanks again to Kevin and Andy and Karen. We have at least one other convention panel on reserve, I believe, from DragonCon. It's probably going to pop up at some point. Maybe next time we need a bank show to fill in like this. So we'll look forward to that. Meanwhile, let's say if you want to go back and hear more of us talking about Aresia, go back to just a few months ago, Flopcast episode 298. That was our Aresia review show. If you missed that one, it's right there where we left it, so you can go check out Flopcast 298 for more Aresia talk. And let's throw in the plugs. Now I've got to try to do this. This is the part that Cornflake does every week. Let's see. Our website is flopcast.net, and you can link to everything else from there. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff, our email address, you can find everything at flopcast.net. Please get in touch with us. Did we somehow miss your favorite Saturday morning show during the panel? Send me a note. Let me know. We love to talk about this kind of stuff around here, of course. And we shall be back next week. Cornflake will be back next week. I promise. We're going to record for real. Everything we were going to talk about this week, we are bumping it back to next week. So we'll see you there.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
I see the potential for basically like another Netflix kind of paradigm shift where here comes this other major player. They have a ton of resources. Apple could change the way that entertainment is consumed.
They say it's the only time this year that you'll have stars from each brand battling each other. And we know it's not going to be the case, but they like to say that, and more power to them, I guess.
Well, it's a big first step, bringing all those superheroes together. There were definitely some parts of the movie that I really enjoyed. And then there were some parts that I thought just kind of fell short of expectation.
Part of it has to be something to do with how it's being promoted. And this is a thing where audiences do not agree with critics.
That's the Pop Culture Cosmo Show.
And the PCC Multiverse, every week on the Podcast Radio Network and Apple Podcasts.
And check out the show today on the ESO Network.
Oh, hello. all right, this is really weird now. Now we're on to, this is the secret after show, of course. This is the part of the show that only people who listen through the promos get to hear. I've never done one of these all by myself, so this is, Eric Carmen style. So this is super weird, but let me see what I can share with you for the secret after show. Here's something. We've got the ESO Network has a Patreon account going now, and there is some exclusive content for Patreon supporters available there. We already contributed one Flopcast episode, which is a bonus episode that you can only hear through the ESO Network's Patreon. That features the mayor of Chickentown out in California, and she's talking with the hosts of the Mutters Spiral Doctor Who podcast. That show is available already, and What I'll tell you guys right now is the second bonus Flopcast show is all done as well. I don't think it's online yet as this show comes out, but it's going to be available very soon. And the second show, if you're missing Cornflake because of this largely Cornflake-free Flopcast episode, our new bonus episode is like all Cornflake. This is Cornflake at MarsCon. Cornflake did this crazy recording at MarsCon. It's her and a bunch of our wacky friends. It's TV's Kyle and Lindsay and a big crowd of our wacky people out there. There's some advance information for you secret after-show people, and I guess the only other secret information I have for you is that I need another cup of coffee, so I've got to go.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at ESOnetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.